my favorite character is the crow that is Kip. Did you notice Kip? Did you see him? You didn't know he was a movie star. Did you notice him before tonight? You did. Oh, you did? Okay. Well, he should have won an award for that. Nice job, Kip. Appreciate you. Yeah. Then we got to watch you get blown up. That was awesome. Hey, tonight, I want to look into the scriptures again, into the Bible. We're going to be in 1 Kings chapter 18 because I want you to see the real story of what you just saw as a metaphor. We're going to be in 1 Kings chapter 18. Here's what I'm going to do tonight. I want to, as we talked about a few things last night, we'll come back to that in just a minute or a few minutes. But tonight I want to walk you through two scenarios where people had to make a choice on who they were going, which God they're going to follow. And the first one is actually Elijah and Ahab and all of these, you saw all these kind of animals around. There's really the prophets of Jezebel and Ahab. And so turn with me to 1 Kings chapter 18. Let's just connect the dots on all of this right now so that we understand kind of what's going on. And Hume is so creative with how they kind of give us this picture and gets us into the story. This is one of the things that I love about the Bible, because if you actually read it enough, you actually can get the storyline of it. Here it's really nice because they kind of give us the storyline, and then we can kind of connect the dots. But it's even more fun for me, at least, to read it myself. But here we go. 1 Kings chapter 18. We're going to start off in verse 1, and we're going to read perhaps the first 6 verses. If you don't have a Bible, these should be on the screen. So here we go. After many days, the word of the Lord came to Elijah in the 3rd year, saying, "Go, show yourself to Ahab, and I will send rain upon the earth." Now, you saw this where Bingo goes up to Doodle, and he calls him out, right? And so this is before that. So God tells him to do this. Verse 2, "So Elijah went to show himself to Ahab. Now the famine was severe in Samaria." This is kind of depicted through the crows, and kind of there's no food, and the land is kind of dry. It's not really flourishing a lot, as you see in the video. Verse 3, "And Ahab called Obadiah," is a new person we're introduced to here, who was over the household. Now, here's what we learned about Obadiah. Now, Obadiah feared the Lord greatly, and when Jezebel cut off, which means killed, the prophets of the Lord, Obadiah took 100 prophets and hid them by 50s in a cave and fed them with bread and water. So here's what you need to know about Obadiah. Obadiah was one of God's people, but he was overseeing the land for basically Ahab in many ways. And when he's out there, he's known as a God-fearing person. He even protected God's people in a lot of different ways. And so here we're introduced to him. And so Ahab calls Obadiah, and this is what he says to him. Verse 5, "And Ahab said to Obadiah, 'Go through the land to all the springs of water and to all the valleys.'" Remember, there's a famine. There's no rain, right? Remember, Elijah said it's not going to rain until who says so? God, right? So it hasn't rained yet. And so they're like scavengers. They're just looking for everywhere. So Ahab tells Obadiah, go look for every nook and cranny of this area for water. And then he says, "Perhaps we may find grass and save the horses and mules alive and not lose some of the animals." So they divided the land between them to pass through it. Ahab went in one direction by himself, and Obadiah went in another direction by himself. Now, if you follow through the storyline, and we'll pick it up here in a few verses, but what happens is Ahab heads in another direction, Obadiah heads in this direction, and they're all looking for grass, food, anything for the animals to eat that a normal farm animal would eat or drink. Obadiah ends up running into Elijah. Now, God was sending Elijah to go see Ahab, right? So Elijah's on his way. And meanwhile, Ahab and Obadiah are like, let's go find food. So Obadiah is going out to find food and water. He ends up running into Elijah. Read the story. He totally freaks out because he knows who Elijah is. Like, this is God's man for this time. He's like the spiritual giant to Obadiah. So Obadiah sees him, falls at his knees, is very respectful to him. And Elijah looks at Obadiah and says, would you go get Ahab? And Obadiah freaks out because he knows, he thinks at least, if he goes back to Ahab and said, Elijah's here, Ahab's going to kill him. He overcomes that fear. He goes back to Ahab and he tells him, Elijah is here to see you. Now we'll skip down to verse 17. Go down to verse 17 and here's what we see. When Ahab saw Elijah, so he goes out, he says, okay, I'm going to go find him. When he sees Elijah, Ahab said to him, is it you, you troubler of Israel? So Ahab's like calling Elijah the problem. This is kind of what I talked about with, that we do with God, actually. We have problems in our life, and then who do we blame? God. Ahab sees problems, and he's like, you're causing all of this problem. Well, if we look at verse 18, he says, and Elijah answered him this, I have not troubled Israel, but you have in your father's house because you have abandoned the commandments of the Lord and followed the Baals. So all of these false lords, you've followed all of them. You've gone outside of God. You haven't trusted God. You're the one that has caused this mess. God's commandments were given to you to protect you, to do what's best for you. But you have chosen to leave that, and that is the problem. So then, he says, verse 19, now therefore, send and gather all of Israel to meet at Mount Carmel, and the 450 prophets of Baal, and the 400 prophets of Asherah, who eat at Jezebel's table. So Jezebel is this woman, it's Ahab's or Doodle's wife in the film, right? And she has all of these prophets, which is kind of depicted by all of these animals. They basically do what she says. And Elijah says, go get them, get all of these prophets, and meet me at Mount Carmel. So we pick it up in verse 20, and it says this, so Ahab sent to all the people of Israel and gathered the prophets together at Mount Carmel. And Elijah came near to all the people and said, how long will you go limping between two different opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. But if Baal, then follow him. And the people did not answer him a word. So you have this moment where Elijah says, Ahab, go get all these prophets, bring them out to Mount Carmel. So they get there. And he says this, this is where it's depicted. He says, look, how long are you going to go around limping around not knowing who you're going to follow? Like, how long can you live like that? Like, choose right now who you're going to follow. Make a choice. Decide something. Don't limp around. So then Elijah says this. He goes, okay, so let's do this. Let's see whose God is the best. So they didn't, like, call out to a scarecrow, but they built this altar and they didn't light it, and they called out to their God to see if he would light it miraculously. They're calling out to God, their God, their Baal, they're worshiping, they're cutting themselves, which was the ritual. They're doing all this stuff to call out to their false God to light the fire, and nothing happens. Elijah then sets up the altar, even pours water on it, and says, watch. What you see, Bingo go bark. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, like animals, crows start exploding, right? In the real story, in history, what happened was, is Elijah just calls out to God, and God essentially blows up the wood and shows up in this powerful way. And then they have this battle afterwards, which you saw happening in the video as well. But all of this came down to the reality that they were wanting. Elijah was calling them to a place of decision, of them deciding who they were going to follow. And they didn't follow. Now, if you take a quick look about this, I think we can look at this and say, like, how come they didn't get it? Like, what was it? I mean, their whole world was broken. Like, nothing was working. They kept noticing all of this brokenness in the world. You and I notice that too. Families are torn apart. People hurt each other. We have all of these kinds of things happening in the world. We look at a film like this, and you see all of this farm not functioning the way that everybody knows it should function. We do this too. We look at the world, and we say, like, man, this isn't, something's not right. It's so easy to look back at this and kind of go, yeah, well, like, they should have known that this was the true God. But we do the same thing. We have to choose every single day on who we're going to follow. And it's so easy for us to, like, start judging other people. And we forget that we actually don't choose to do that on a daily basis either. Now, this isn't a surprise to you, so I'm a pastor, right? I pastor... I know, it's surprising. I know, it's crazy. That actually kind of scared me. Who said that? What, did you do that? I was like, wow. A little duck quacking right here. It's like, where? And so, like, sometimes I travel around, which I'm here, and there was a few years back, actually, I traveled to Omaha, Nebraska, and I married my mom. And I, well, yeah. Yeah, sorry. Sorry. Yeah, I'm not from Oklahoma. I live in Portland, Oregon, so we don't do that stuff. What I meant to say is I went and actually performed my mother's wedding. So what I haven't told you is my mom and my dad have both been married 3 times. My mom's been divorced 3 times. And my mom's third marriage, they asked me to perform the wedding. So this is about 10, 12 years ago. And I'm flying out from Burbank, California to Omaha, Nebraska, where, like, cows and corn live. And I'm out there, and I do this wedding. It was great. It's kind of like a family reunion in a lot of ways. And I'm on the flight back home. Now, here's the deal. I'm a pastor, but I'm a Christian first. And sometimes, I'm pretty introverted, actually, but sometimes when I'm next to somebody on a plane, I like to ask them what they do for a living, because at some point, like, you have to be totally rude not to at some point ask me what I do for a living. And sometimes that's a really good conversation. Plus, they can't go anywhere for, like, 3 hours. So, like, we can have a discussion. I don't want to be awkward and weird, but sometimes I like to strike up a conversation. So I'm flying back from Omaha, Nebraska. I get on the plane, and you know, if you've ever flown on a plane, you sit there and everybody's putting in their, I get in a little early, they're putting up their luggage on the things, and people are walking down the aisle, and all of a sudden there's 2 guys that seem to be friends in the 2 rows in front of me, but on the aisle, right? So they're sitting in front and back of each other, but they clearly know each other because they're talking or whatever. And I'm, like, just looking around. I love to people watch, right? So I'm just people watching on the plane, and this lady walks on the plane, and she's, I don't know, she's nothing compared to my wife, but these 2 guys, seriously, my wife's hot. They look over, literally what I see right in front of me, these 2 guys do this. And they're looking at this lady, right? And I'm like, wow, check this out. Some people watching, right? I'm like, this is hilarious. So she comes up to me, and there's, in my row, there's 3 seats. I'm sitting in the aisle, there's an empty seat in the middle, and then this lady sitting in the window seat reading her book, being totally rude, not talking to me. So, like, I start to just watch this whole scenario, and I start to see them, like, leaning like this. And so I'm like, this is hilarious. So she walks past, and the guy in front of the other friend, like, literally starts to turn and, like, check the lady out as she walks past. And which, ladies, you need to know about that. That's why you dress modestly here. But she comes to me, and she goes, oh, that's my seat. So I said, oh, okay. So I get out. I let her in. I lean over to the guy, and I go, sucker. And so I sit down. No, I'm just kidding. So I sit down, and so I just said hi, you know, and she said hi. And And so we haven't even taken off yet. And I said, so do you live in Burbank? And she goes, yeah, actually, I just ride around there. I go, what were you doing in Omaha? She goes, actually, I was in Minneapolis. And I go, oh, that's cool. What were you doing in Minneapolis? And I was like, business or pleasure? And she goes, actually, just for work. Oh, cool. What do you do? Right? See how that works? Oh, what do you do? She goes, I'm a dancer. And I go, oh, see, girls, you guys are smarter than I was. Because I'm just like, oh, that's cool. Like, who do you dance for? And she goes, myself. I'm thinking like Justin Timberlake background dancer. She goes, oh, I dance for myself. And she could tell, like, I honestly don't understand. Like, I'm like, you dance for yourself? And she goes, yeah, you know, I travel around and I dance. And she knows, like, I'm like, well, I don't understand. She goes, I'm a stripper. And I go, oh, like, oh, I just didn't expect it, right? So I'm like, oh, okay. So I'm like sitting there and I'm like,
oh, it's so nice.
I just don't know what to say now, right? So I go, but you're going home, right? And she goes, yeah, I'm going home. I'm actually going to go home a day early. I'm going to surprise my husband. And I go, oh, wow. I go, that's cool. I go, you're just going to surprise, like, you show up at home and he doesn't know you're coming home. And she says, well, actually, I'm going to go to work, to his work and surprise him there. I go, oh, that's cool. What does he do? Like, let's get out, like, keep going here. So she goes, oh, he's a cameraman, which is not like a like, it's like, okay, like, oh, I live in Burbank area. You guys are way smarter than I was. So I go, and I, like, we're living in the Burbank, Hollywood area. I know a lot of people in the business that were in our church. It's like pretty simple. So I go, oh, that's cool. I go, does he film TV, movies? She goes, yeah, both. And I go, like, anything I would have seen? And she goes, well, I don't know. And I go, well, name something. And she names something. I was like, eh, never seen that. I go, like, what channel, like, TV? And she goes, yeah. And she goes, that's a Spice Channel. And I go, oh, a cameraman, right? So now I'm sitting there, and I'm just like, we haven't even taken off yet, right? So I'm sitting there, and I'm just going, I have no idea what to say right now. So then she looks at me, and she goes, so what do you do? Literally, and I don't even think about it. I just turn to her and go, I'm a pastor. And she does it. She goes, no! And she, like, slams her head in her lap. And she just, like, screams. I'm like, shut up! You know, because, like, everybody thinks I'm hijacking this plane, you know? So she has her head in her lap. These guys are like, what the heck, you know, in front of me. And I'm just like, ooh, you know. And so she looks up. This is literally what she does. She comes out of her lap and points at me with two fingers. And she says this, I am not a bad person. It's literally what she said. And I look at her and I go, no, you're just kind of gross. Like, I don't know. No, I'm just kidding. I didn't say that. I didn't say that. I didn't even think that. I just looked at her and I'm like, no. I didn't. Honestly, like, I wasn't thinking that at all. And she goes, you know, like, are you a pastor or a priest? And I go, I'm a pastor at a Christian church. And she goes, oh, Christian. I go, yeah. She goes, oh, I'm a Christian. And I go, oh, really? I go, can you tell me about that? Like, tell me about your story. She walks through her story. And she starts telling me about how her parents weren't Christian, but her grandma would go take her to church throughout her whole life. She went through Awana's, like Awana program. She went to Sunday school every Sunday. She went through youth group, mission trips, camps like this, all of this. And about her junior year in high school, she stopped going and she kind of started to question God and all this. And now she's at this place in life where she doesn't feel like she has any relationship with God. All of this is happening. We haven't even left Omaha. So we, over 3 hours, have this really cool conversation. But when I get off the plane, she doesn't, like, you know, pray with me or anything like that. It's just a really cool conversation. I get off the plane, very kind lady, very nice lady, very sweet, actually. I get off the plane. I'm walking to my car, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, what happened? Like, how could she? I didn't grow up in the church, right? So I'm thinking to myself, like, how could she grow up learning about all this stuff and then just throw it away? These are my honest thoughts and feelings. Like, how can she just throw this away? And I start to like look down on her arrogantly. And then it hit me as I'm actually getting into my car. I'm like, I'm an idiot. Like, I'm not any better than her. I might have some things a little more clear in my head and stuff like that, but she's not like a horrible person. Maybe confused, maybe disillusioned a little bit, maybe has a different understanding of what it means to be a follower of Jesus than I do. But then my heart kind of started to break for her. This is what leads me to the point of tonight. I want to walk you through these two scenarios where people have to choose who they would follow. And as I got back into my car, I had to realize that, man, I need to decide that every single day of my life. And so here's the second scenario of people that have to choose who they're going to follow. It's at Hume, 2016, New England. This is the scenario. Because as we look at this, you don't have to read much of the Bible to understand that Jesus calls people to follow him. That is very clear. You don't have to read much of the Bible to understand that God calls to people. Now, if you're not a Christian, you might be saying, wow, you know what? If I could build an altar of wood and God show up like that, I would follow him too. But here's what I want to point out to you, two things really briefly. First off, Elijah calls these people to worship God before he lights the fire. They could have decided beforehand. The second thing I would say is this, that even after God did that and showed up in that way, they still chose not to follow him. This is why I say to you, if you don't believe after some of the things I'm even going to say and after this week, it doesn't matter what kind of miracle happens, you probably won't believe anyway. The truth is you don't need God to show up in miraculous ways because we have the Word of God and we have the Spirit of God. And I think he can change you in an instant. And so out of love, I want to kind of walk you through a couple of things because last night I talked to you about this, right? God creates the world and then time as we go through it, we know it. And how we determine what these increments are in life, we see these through who we believe God is back here. And what I want to make very clear to you is that God expressed his love to the world most obviously in and through Jesus, who was the perfect imprint of his love. But we have to understand one thing clearly. Because the world was so broken throughout history, Jesus did not leave this relationship and enter the world to follow the world's ways. That doesn't make any sense. He left this relationship for a time in that manner, became a human being to look at everybody and say, look, I'm not asking you to invite me into your life. Your life is broken. I'm calling you into my life, what I see here. This is the difference. And out of love, he calls us to follow him. Now, I want to explain this a little bit more. Because if you have a Bible, turn to the book of Mark. If you don't, it's okay, because I'll put these on the screen and we're going to flip here pretty quick. But what happens is when Jesus is walking on the earth, all of these people start doing all this stuff. And there's one point when they look to Jesus and go, look, we're doing all these things. They're actually fasting and praying. They're going through this time of prayer and fasting. And they ask Jesus, like, look, all, like even John and his disciples, all of us Pharisees, what all Pharisees are just good moral church going people, synagogue goers, but they go, why aren't you doing what we're doing? Here's how Jesus responds. He responds to them in Mark chapter 2 in verse, let's start in verse 21. Back here. 21. This is what he says. He gives them a metaphor. He says, no one sews a piece of unshrunk cloth on an old garment. If he does, the patch tears away from it, the new from the old, and a worse tear is made. So in other words, this is what Jesus says, like, you're asking me why I'm not doing what you're doing? Let me just explain this. You don't take an old shirt that has a tear in it and then find a new piece of cloth and put it on. Because when you do that, when you wash that shirt again, that new piece of cloth is going to shrink and the hole is going to actually be worse. So in other words, what Jesus is saying is, look, I didn't come here to join what you're doing. I'm not a patch you just put on yourself as you go about your ways. I'm calling you into something greater. So he uses this other illustration. He says this, verse 22. And no one puts new wine into old wineskins. If he does, the wine will burst the skins, and the wine is, what's the word? Destroyed. And so are the skins, but new wine is for new wineskins. What's Jesus saying? Like back in that day, they had these like animal skins that would hold wine. And it would be so heavy that the skins would stretch. You could use them once, but if you put a whole new batch of wine in there, it couldn't hold it. It would burn, burst out, and all of that wine would go to waste. It's destroyed. So in other words, Jesus is saying is like, look, I'm not just not a patch that you put onto your life. I don't fit into your containers either. Your little boxes, I don't fit into your containers. It doesn't work that way. I am not asking you to invite me into your life. I'm going to ask you to enter into mine. Now, I have this thing called an iPhone. And this is an iPhone 6. Before this, I had an iPhone 4. And then before that, I had an iPhone 3. I'm not even sure some of you were born, which is awesome. iPhone 3G I had. And certainly wouldn't have held Pokemon Go app. But you have this iPhone 3G. Here's the amazing thing about Apple and technology with cell phones now, other than being able to take more and more money out of you because they keep changing the technology and you have to keep up with it. Here's the amazing thing. If I was to take the technology that is in this phone and try to put it even as near as my old iPhone 3G, if I was to try to take this technology and put it into my iPhone 3G, you know what the iPhone 3G would do to the technology? It would ruin it. It doesn't work like that. The beautiful thing about the technology is that all of the technology that worked in the past can be integrated into the new operating system. And it actually makes it function better. This is what Jesus is saying. Look, I'm not asking you to take me and put me into your ways of doing life. I'm asking you over here to come into my ways in life, and then you will experience life abundant. But everybody he talks to, he calls them to a decision on this. Before anybody would claim to be a Christian or a Christ follower, he says this. Mark 8 is a perfect example. This is what he says in Mark 8, verse 34 and 35. And calling the crowd to him with his disciples, he said to them, if anyone would come after me, like he didn't say like, if anybody invites me to come after them, he's saying, no. If anybody would come after me, come into my life, accept my invitation, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. Luke actually says the same thing. He says, follow me daily. So it's a consistent, constant choice that we have to make on who we are following. He then says, for whoever would save his life will lose it. In other words, if you want to experience true life, you're going to have to leave it behind and follow me and accept my invitation into my life. And then he says, but whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospels will save it. So in other words, I reverse that. But he's like, if you're trying to save your life, you're never going to get what you want. But if you could like give up fighting for your own image and fighting for your own things, and give that up and follow me, you're going to experience true life, the life that this loving God designed for you to live. And you're going to do that in the midst of a broken world. Here's my concern for you. My concern this week is that many of you know enough about the Bible to feel guilty, but you haven't experienced following Jesus enough to experience the joy. And this is the decision I'm calling you to tonight. You know enough about the Bible to feel guilty, but you haven't gone far enough with Jesus in life to actually experience the joy of following him actually. And when we look at passages like this, we could talk about the Christian faith like so that we, when we die tonight, we can go to be a God in heaven and all of that. And there's I don't want to devalue that in any way. But you have to understand the Christian life is actually more beautiful than that. That's not the full story. And the Christian life is not about trying to do good things and stay away from bad things. The Christian life is not just about being with God for all eternity. It's about walking with Jesus today. And we can't act like these passages are not in the Bible. Constantly throughout the scriptures, God is calling people to choose. How long will you go on limping around between all of these opinions? At some point, you have to make a decision which God you're going to follow. Your own image, your own idolatry, or the one true God. Jesus, as the perfect imprint of God's love, says, follow me. Now, when my wife and I first started dating, it was in 1999. Anybody born yet? Yeah, a few of you. Awesome. That makes me feel awesome. So my wife and I were working at this camp called Hume Lake. And I told her I wanted to be more than friends with her twice, and she turned me down both times, right? So here's what I said. I appreciate the confidence there. So here's what I said. I'm like, okay, like I'm not going to be that guy that asks her a third time. So I didn't like avoid her, but I didn't pursue her at all. So she comes back to me and she starts talking to me about, after about a week or so, she comes back, she goes, you know, can we talk? And I'm like, sure, about what? And she goes, you know that conversations that we've had this summer? I'm like, no. Like I wanted her to say it. I was being mean. And so she's like, you know, like when we're talking about friendship or not. And I'm like, well, what do you mean? And I like made her say it, right? Which I don't know why I did that. But she's like, you know, I thought I want to try it. So the first date, we're an hour and a half away from any like town. So on a Saturday, we had off work and we drive down and we're going to have dinner and go see a movie. And I'm low on gas. So I pull into this gas station and I get out, put the pump in, you know, pay with my credit card, put the pump in, and I get back in the car and we're talking. And we're talking and talking and talking, and then I realize, oh man, we're late for our dinner reservation. So I start the car and I drive away, right? And I drive away and I hear this clunk, clunk, and I look up in the mirror, in my rearview mirror, and sure enough, the gas pump was not only still in my car when I drove away, it has this, apparently, this detaching mechanism, because I'm not the only idiot in the world, and it detached, it like ripped off of the gas tank, and it's laying about 10 feet in front of where my car was parked while I was getting gas. So I had drug it a little bit, and then it like, and then fell out. And I'm watching this in my mirror as I'm pulling away, and I look over to Barbara, and she has no clue that this happened. So I just keep on driving. It's like too new of a relationship, man. I ain't blowing this one, right? So I'm like, oh my God, I don't think she saw. And I just keep driving. Now, I'm not recommending this. I'm just telling you what I did. And in that moment, I thought, literally, I'm like, if this is better that she doesn't know. Like, I'm just going to act like this didn't happen. And it's like, and then, and we just went. I got to the parking lot and I go, I'll get your door. I get out. Why? Because I'm a gentleman? Nah. I got to close the gas tank, right? So I walk all the way around the car, slyly close the gas tank, open the door. We go into dinner, have a great dinner, and we go see a movie. I told her this story about 3 months later when I knew she liked me. And then I could tell her how much of an idiot I am. And so she's like, why did you do that? And I'm like, well, in that moment, I just thought it's better to act like this didn't happen. And she's like, oh, I could see that. I probably would have thought you were an idiot. And I'm like, yeah, see? Here's the deal. It is definitely easier in this moment to act like Jesus is not calling you to follow him. It'll feel better in the moment, but you need to understand that God does not stop calling people to follow him. And at some point, some of you have to decide, am I going to keep limping around between this decision, or am I going to actually follow the one true God? Now, I know, because I know I'm human, and I know in a room this size, many of you have not decided to follow Jesus, and you have some reasons for that. You have some like pain in your life that you're trying to figure out. You're confused about a certain amount of things, or you just flat out, maybe it's not all like painful in your life, but maybe you're just like, yeah, I just don't know if I believe. That's okay. I think for all of us in this room, though, there are obstacles in our lives that keep us from actually following Jesus. And by the end of the week, I'm going to call you to another decision. Tonight, I'm doing the same. You can talk to your counselors tonight, but here's what I will say to you. Tomorrow morning, I'm also going to talk about some things, try to help you overcome something tomorrow morning, and then another thing tomorrow night, and then tomorrow night, we're going to talk about the same thing again. You just need to know that I love you, we love you, the adults around you love you enough to come to a point where we say, how long are you going to keep limping around? Like, you got to make a decision that every day you're going to choose who you follow, and his name is going to be Jesus. Let me pray for you.